Welcome to Spanish Janice. I'm Janice Burt, and today we're diving into conversations that inspire growth, connection, and confidence. You're watching Now Media Television.
Welcome, everybody, to Spanish Janice, where we dive into the stories, the struggles, and the strengths that shape who we are and how we show up in the world. I am your host, Janice Burt, and today's conversation is all about visibility, presence, and the courage to speak, the courage to be. Our guest, Professor Liz Coleman, is a communications expert, a TEDx speaker, educator, and coach who has spent more than 15 years helping people overcome self-doubt, anxiety, communication barriers that tend to keep them small. And she has guided leaders, organizations toward more powerful, connected communication that transforms relationships and builds that courage muscle and that confidence. Liz, thank you for joining me in the studio today.
I know. What is this? I love being here.
I love being here with you.
Yeah.
So, fun fact, everybody. Liz and I go back to high school. I want to say about maybe 14 years old. And so because this is Spanish Janice, I thought we would start with our favorite song.
Oh my gosh.
Hasta que me olvides, voy a amarte tanto, tanto. Like that. Okay, so we went to Luis Miguel, our first concert together in Spanish, and just had the most amazing time. You are such a dear friend. Oh my gosh, didn't expect to get emotional on this show, but truly you just inspire me. And I want to talk about communication, like truly how to tap into our presence, to be connected with one another. And I want to start with, I know now you're a professor and a coach and you've been doing this for years, but go back to the beginning and tell us about that journey of becoming a professor and stepping into that role.
Well, it was in, I think, around 2000, so almost 25 years ago, I started applying for a master's program in communication. And to be honest, I had no idea what I wanted to do with it. I enjoyed it. I loved learning. I knew that much. But it wasn't until I was in grad school where I started getting opportunities to teach in the classroom. So it was like a paid, you're a graduate assistant, so you can get in the classroom. And as soon as I got in there, I was like, oh, I love this. So getting into the classroom, I started realizing I enjoy not only learning, but actually like teaching communication to other students. I definitely didn't have the skills that I do now, so it was intimidating for me. It was a process. I probably was only a few years older than the students that I was teaching at the time, so it was definitely a struggle to kind of find my way. I think at the beginning, figuring out like how do I do this, how do I show up, still kind of lead in the classroom, but also allow for learning. So it was an interesting journey to start, for sure.
An interesting journey. And when you're that close in age to somebody that you're teaching, what is the reframe? Like, what's the mindset shift that has to happen when you're in that kind of a space to kind of talk yourself up and be like, you know what? I can do this, because I know you talk to clients about imposter syndrome also, and having that feeling of, do I belong here? Am I good enough for this? So what did you use back in the day, or even what do you use now and tell clients
I was going to say, the advice I have for clients is not what I used. If I could go back to that version of myself, I'd have very different techniques and advice. I didn't use the best techniques. I think I tried to fit into other people's shoes and to be what I thought a professor looked like. I think policies and I was much more rigid. There was this fear of letting go of control in the classroom, probably in all aspects of my life. And I could say, you know, fast forward 25 years later, how I teach in the classroom is vastly different. So I still have sometimes that feeling of insecurity or like, who am I to be, you know, either teaching or even coaching clients at times. So that imposter syndrome, I think, still kind of creeps up, but now I'm thankful for it. I think before I would kind of like push it away and like go in this closet, you know, I didn't have the tools. And so I might pretend like, oh, I remember when I first got pregnant, I'm like, oh, I'm married and pregnant. Like I would use anything I could to make myself like, we are not the same age, right? Like there's a difference here. Whereas now I just allow myself to be in that discomfort. And I encourage my clients to identify it. Like, what's that? What's the feeling that you have? What are the emotions that are underlining it? And so we know that our feelings impact our thoughts and our thoughts impact our behavior. And so that's why I love communication. It starts with us. Like, how are we communicating to ourselves? So a technique, not a technique I invented, but I really appreciate, is from an author, Ethan Cross, and he has the book Chatter. And he talks about kind of internal rumination and how these negative self-talk or, which, you know, obviously imposter syndrome has that element to it. And so a couple hacks that he has is a third person hack. So now it's like, Liz, you belong in this space. Liz, you have value to add. And the same thing, I have clients create really personalized third person hacks because we get to see the science and how it actually like calms down the central nervous system. And just being present and recognizing like no one's perfect. And some of the people that I admire the most are really comfortable in that imperfection. And so just kind of leaning into that. But the advice I had 25 years ago, definitely not the advice I would have today.
You're like, maybe not exactly the same.
Yeah.
I really like that third person hack. It almost takes you out of yourself.
Yep.
So that you can look at things objectively.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that's a really good one to kind of create that distance to at least have that space for awareness. Mm-hmm. Don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Like, totally.
And this piece of awareness, I think, is super important. I know you teach a lot on emotional intelligence as well, which is, you know, awareness is the beginning of all things.
Yeah.
What are some tools, thoughts that you have about awareness and how to gain awareness for ourselves more deeply?
Well, I think one of the best strategies is really going to what we would consider like an emotional wheel. And so expanding our vocabulary. Oftentimes there is this low hanging fruit, like, oh, we feel this strong emotion. It's like, I'm angry or fearful, but we don't go deeper. And so being able to actually label it accurately. So is it really anger or is it based in fear? Like, which oftentimes imposter syndrome or other emotions we might have, when we go to the emotional wheel and we expand our vocabulary, I can't give credit to, I don't know who the author is of this or the researcher, but this idea of name it to tame it. And I feel like there's so much power in that. So self-awareness, if I'm, you know, if I'm experiencing these feelings and I'm labeling it incorrectly of like, this is anger, or even like an interview like this, right? There's a normal level of like, your body's going to react. There's like a little bit of the butterflies before we started meeting, like, how do I sit? And so all that stuff is real inside my body. And before it's like, oh, I'm nervous. And then that's going to show up in how I show up in this interview versus if I'm like, ooh, the same feeling can be excitement. But if I don't have the emotional vocabulary to label it, if I'm not naming it, then I'm not necessarily growing my own self-awareness and I can project that onto other people. Like, they caused me to feel this way, or this situation is to blame for how I'm feeling. Whereas that inward self-awareness can be just, I think it's such a game changer on lots of levels.
I love that. So give us a couple of more words, like you're talking about the vocabulary, the fear.
Yes.
What are some of the more common ones that you see people identify?
I think one of the biggest ones that people don't identify accurately at first is judgment. Because typically when they have like a strong emotional response, they're either in judgment for themselves or in judgment of someone else. And so when we are not recognizing that judgment, we don't necessarily identify what need we have. Like, it's hard to come from a place of curiosity for someone or an openness or love when we have this subconscious judgment that we're not accurately labeling. So I think judgment and also guilt. So sometimes someone might say something to us, like, you didn't lock the door, you're not, you know, you didn't do the dishes or something like that. And you kind of feel defensive, or they might make some kind of accusation in a work environment. Like, you didn't do X, Y, or Z. You didn't do that project right. And so there can be this feeling of, ooh, that doesn't feel good. I just felt kind of criticized. My body doesn't feel good. And so now I'm going to think of everything you've done in the past where I felt the same way, instead of just kind of taking it as information and going, wait a second, what does my body feel in this moment? That feels uncomfortable because I'm your employee and I don't want to let you down, or I'm your boss and I want to make the right decisions. And so that self-awareness can be really helpful. So guilt is another one. A lot of words housed in fear, insecurity, not good enough. I think there's also like worried or anxious that we don't necessarily like, oh, I'm worried I didn't do a great job. That might have a consequence that I don't really want. I also think when it comes to anger, things of like being activated, sometimes anger is a mask for deeper emotions like sadness. Mm-hmm. So
I have feeling heard lost. That like when you're angry, there's always sadness underneath is what I've heard. It's kind of like that deeper, more primal, you know, and a lot of times the anger is a little bit of a cover.
100%
to actually go into that deep sadness, which we all as human beings experience. And so that is so fascinating. We are going to take a short break, but when we come back, we are going to talk about the pause movement that Liz has a TEDx talk on pause, and she's going to share all about that with us. Stay with us.
We'll be right back with more insight, inspiration, and real conversations. This is Spanish Janice on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Janice Burt, and you're watching Spanish Janice. Let's keep growing together.
Welcome back to Spanish Janice. Want more of what you are watching? Then stay connected to Spanish Janice and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual, eso muy bien, programming in English and Spanish. And if you're on the move, you can also catch the podcast version right from our website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and news to lifestyle, culture, and beyond, Now Media TV is streaming around the clock 24/7 wherever you are. And welcome back. We are here with the amazing Liz Coleman. And as I promised, we are going to dive deep into the pause movement. So Liz, tell us all about how to pause.
Yes. So PAUSE is an acronym. I think many people kind of understand this importance of pausing in general, strategically, whether it's during a presentation or just taking a moment to kind of gather our thoughts. But one of the things for me with PAUSE is in the discipline, there's like so many great different techniques that I love. And I felt like PAUSE does a great job of kind of capturing for me, as a reminder of like, how do I stay present to really create some deeper, more meaningful conversations with people? So the acronym just breaks down really simply. P is about being present. So it's just am I present? What is today's date? Who am I with? And what's my role? We occupy so many different roles right now, interviewer, interviewee, but maybe in an hour we'll be a different role. And so are we present with the person that we're with? In that moment. And so sometimes just naming the day and the time before we go into interaction can just help us to be present. Put down the phone, simple. And then the next layer deeper is about appreciation. So this can be done without even saying a word, just like present. It's about, you know, some kind of confirming message. Maybe it's through eye contact. Maybe it's nodding the head, recognizing that you see the person. It could be acknowledging like, oh, that's cool. Just really simple. And then taking that a layer deeper to me is where the magic happens really is with you. And that's understanding. So pause is not just a framework for your relationships with other people, but it's also for yourself. So when we think about you, it's about understanding. It goes back to this idea of like, how am I feeling? What are my emotions around it? But then also holding space for someone else's emotions. So when we're in relationships with other people, it's not just about us. It's this two-way dynamic. So kind of listening for like what's not being said in conversation, asking quality like questions to understand how someone's feeling and going a little bit deeper in that. And then also asking questions of yourself. So that's kind of the third layer. And then going a step further in conversation is once you've gotten to understanding, you can go to support. And so support doesn't mean that you're giving like unsolicited advice. Oh, here's what you should do. It's really about looking for opportunities of maybe asking a quality question or maybe an invitation to communication. Hey, I've been in a situation similar to that. I don't know if it'd be helpful to give you some techniques or tips on maybe navigating it, or how can I show up for you? How can I help you? Simple questions like that offer another, it's we call it like confirming messages, just a deeper level of connection with someone else. And then E doesn't always have to happen, but that's kind of like the highest level in the pause framework. And that's about elevating the conversation. So someone tells you about a job interview or something that they're worried about. E is elevate. And so sometimes doesn't even happen in the immediate conversation, but it's like that going the extra mile. Hey, how did that interview go on Thursday? Or how was the trip with, you know, your significant other? Do you have any pictures? That's making that deeper level of connection with other people. So,
ooh, yeah. I see. I love this. I love the framework because it just gives you something that you can go off of and remind yourself, you know, wait a minute, am I P-A-U-S-E, you know, and then go look into that a little bit deeper.
Yeah.
I really want to touch more on this concept of connecting to self because yes, connecting to others is vital. Obviously, I mean, we're made for community. We need relationships. I have just found that so much of that stems like how our relationships are going to be is directly related to how we show up for ourselves.
Yeah.
So going back to this kind of understanding piece, I know that meditation is important to you and really taking that time for yourself. Beyond that, what other things, tools, techniques can other people use to really build a solid, firm relationship with self?
Yeah. So I don't want to be overly redundant, but I'm such a huge fan of emotional intelligence. And it's like one of the number one determinants. Like IQ, we can't change. It's pretty much set in stone at 5 years old. EQ, emotional intelligence, is much more malleable. So we can learn that skill. And I think that that understanding part is all about our emotional intelligence. So I was just reading a book recently by Dr. Travis Bradbury, and he talks about how our brain processes all content through an emotional lens first, which I think is fascinating. Like we experience up to 400 emotions every single day. And so he talks about like this region in our brain, the limbic brain, this portion of our brain, how it processes all information there, and then it tries to make sense of it. And so when we think about understanding, again, a little redundant, but yes, meditation is an awesome technique, but going to the wheel and not going to the wheel when there's like a triggering event, but actually as a daily practice. And that's something I did for years. And that's the reason why, like, ask me any section on the wheel and I'm like, okay, here are some words there. It's not just as a homework assignment. It's so that way when I do feel triggered or when I do have an emotional reaction, I can go, oh, what really is this? Am I labeling it correctly? So going to the emotional wheel, I have clients do it like a 30-day challenge. So every day. And then also not just going to the wheel when you have an activating event, but going to it proactively. Like you're a leader, you're wanting to go into a meeting. How do you want to feel? oh, I want to feel love and connection. I want to feel brave. I want to feel courageous. So practicing the technique ahead of time helps to build your kind of emotional EQ highway. So that way, when you're in those intense situations, you have access to it. So practice that ahead of time. Mm-hmm. I think that's really helpful. Certainly meditation. And then also identifying, like, what are your needs? Every single human's different. Like, some people are like, a good cry is like, ah, cathartic. Others, getting more information. Sometimes it's taking action, even when we're feeling nervous or scared. And so I think it's really important to make a list of what fills you, right? For me, hiking is something that if I'm challenging or if I'm stuck in an idea or a thought, I get out and I can like flex that muscle. So just understanding like, what are my needs? What's my personality type? Like, what brings me like a calmness in my body? And that's gonna look different for everyone. For me, things as simple as like a bath, taking a hike, maybe a cry, journaling is really helpful. And so kind of flexing those tools. And then I definitely think a journaling practice is great because, and there's so many different ways to do that, but just a quick post-it note, it doesn't have to be overly complicated, but what are you grateful for? So much research in gratitude and grounded in gratitude that when you are expressing gratitude, it helps you to understand and be aware of your surroundings. Like, where am I at? What do I need? And connects us more to the world around us. And so I think those would probably be my like top five techniques.
Love it. And just calling in gratitude. Mm. We are grateful for this studio. An amazing Steven is here with us. I love that. And what we focus on truly expands and grows.
Yep.
So if we're focused on gratitude and giving thanks, we don't have time or space or mental energy to be negative or focus on anything else. Those are some great tools. What do you feel about visualization? Is this something that you've ever done, or do you know any people that use that as a tool?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends. Like, when you're talking about visualization, like an actual like a vision board, or are you talking about just kind of like sitting in it and visualizing yourself succeeding in something?
Well, kind of both.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, vision boards are awesome. Actually, I know you do vision boards because I've done one at your house. but I guess I was thinking more of the literal closing your eyes. And visualize, like you were saying, when you go into an event, you say, I want to feel joy. I want to feel this and that. Maybe on a deeper level, even, do you feel like when you close your eyes and you actually visualize yourself in that meeting, standing confidently?
Yep.
Shoulders.
I know.
Back,
I'm like, Janice, I know I gotta like be a little bit taller. Yeah.
Whatever it is for you.
Yes.
And then, because I've read something where your brain doesn't really know the difference between something real and imagined. And so being able to give yourself almost that gift, but it does take time to act and intention to sit down and do a visualization. But tell me even about the vision boards, like what is it that you've used in that regard?
Well, definitely the vision boards, but going back to what you said, because I think that's probably a really powerful tool as well, is this idea of visualizing yourself succeeding or being on stage or doing the interview. There is a lot of good supporting evidence around that. I know that there's a researcher, Amy Cuddy. She's done a lot with like power posing and stuff. And I remember when I was first teaching and it came out like, oh, do a Wonder Woman pose before you give a speech and it's going to help you like feel less anxious. And I thought, that's a bunch of crap. Like, I honestly thought there's no way that's going to help. But what's cool is she's actually had a lot of people push back on the research. Like, there's no way. But it's scientifically proven that it's like a releasing of testosterone and different hormones, that when we hold ourselves in a position, that's right. Whether it's, well, you have to hold it for 2 minutes too. That's the other thing, right? Yeah. You can't just be like, oh, it's kind of like meditation. People are like, I did it 3 times and I don't feel a difference, right? So it's really about whether it is actually holding the pose. But there's such cool science now around how it's not just our brain down. We can regulate thoughts that we have by regulating our body posturing and even, like you said, the visualization. So visualizing ourselves succeeding on stage can help. And I think vision boards are awesome because they're a visual representation of what our hopes and dreams are. And so being able to kind of see that on the daily, all right, this is, these are my hopes and dreams, and this is what I want moving forward, I think can be incredibly powerful for like, just what it is it's conscious communication. So we might unconsciously want those things, but bringing it to the conscious mind and being able to actually visually see like, oh, wait, yeah, that is a goal to, you know, accomplish this level of elevation on a hike, or to travel, or to earn money. And so if you're seeing that all the time, it's kind of reminding your mind, oh yeah, this is consciously what I want. And now I need to act in accordance to achieve that.
Yes. Conscious communication, intentionality. Yep. I love it. Everybody, we will be right back with the one and only Liz Coleman.
We'll be right back with more insight, inspiration, and real conversations. This is Spanish Janice on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Janice Burt, and you're watching Spanish Janice. Let's keep growing together.
Welcome back to Spanish Janice. We are going to talk about something right now that I think is huge. Huge for every person. And I don't care if you're a business owner, a mom, a dad, you have a partner, you're just alive and breathing. Listen up, because we're talking about listening skills, listening. So yeah. Liz, tell us your thoughts on listening, research that you've done, because I know you've done quite a bit in this realm. Just tell us everything you know about listening.
How much time do I have? I love it. I think it's the number one skill that we need to develop. It's definitely underdeveloped. We don't spend time teaching how to listen, but it is definitely a skill that we can acquire. And there is so much power in effective listening. So, so not to bog down on the research, but I think just to lay a foundation of why it's so important, more than 55% of any given day is spent in a listening posture. So, and that could be listening to the radio for pleasure or a deep, heavy conversation, a business meeting. But because more than 55% of our day is spent listening, it's so important that we actually like realize like what are the techniques for listening and distinguishing what's the difference between hearing and listening. So hearing is involuntary. You know, we have like those sound waves in our ears that are going off. And so we might hear something, but it's also the reason why people will say, are you even like listening to anything I'm saying? And then short-term memory, we can be like, oh yeah, you said da 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 da, right? So we can remember and hold on to stuff, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we're truly listening. So I feel like when I think about listening, I think of listening as a whole body experience. It's not just with our ears, but it's really about listening with our head. So how are we like listening with like cognitively? Are we distracted? Are we thinking about something else? Listening with our heart, like with empathy, and listening to really understand what's not being said. And then also like our body. Are we on our phones? Are we just kind of gazing, looking at the person? And so I like to kind of think about it as those three aspects. So we can talk about holistic listening. And then there's some pitfalls and some barriers for each of those that we can talk about too.
Okay. As we were talking, I remembered this experience I had when I did the yoga teacher training.
Yeah.
And they had us sit, and it was kind of a listening, probably empathy session training. But she said, okay, you're going to talk to one person for 3 minutes straight. Your job is the talker. Then that person's job is to listen to everything you say. But she even said without offering any type of anything. Mm-hmm. So no nods, no uh-huhs, you know, no, none of that. Like literally you're just looking at the person and you're listening. And I will tell you, though, it was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It was super uncomfortable. But as the talker, as I was talking and there was a person there who was looking at me intently and just listening, there was something hugely beautiful about it. I felt more free to share deeply. I knew they were engaged and connected.
Yeah.
So anyway, just throwing that out there as sometimes we should try these little experiments, I think, of listening. What would be some other ways that you would suggest if somebody wanted to go out and just experiment with listening? You know, it could be, okay, you're listening to this person and then you need to ask them questions based on what they just said. Because if you need to ask questions, you're really going to be listening like, oh, what's something really interesting that I want to ask a question about? Or what are your thoughts on things people can do to actually get better at that?
Okay, so I love this question. And I would say let's take one step back, because I think the biggest thing before we figure out the technique on like how to become a better listener, which that strategy you gave is awesome, thinking about what are the barriers that show up for you. And that's very individual. So we oftentimes people don't recognize they have a listening style, like a go-to listening style. So are you a relational listener, or are you a time task-oriented listener? Are you someone that just listens to, just in general, your listening position or style? That can be helpful, because depending on what your style is, you're going to have different techniques. So if I have, a lot of my clients are very, time is money, right? That's a waste of time. And so when they're listening to their spouse or even employee talk about something, they're already planning a response in their head. They're not staying in the conversation. So recognizing first, oh, like I'm a time or a task oriented listener. So I need to move. If it's a continuum, I need to be more relational. And so I would give techniques that are building more relational connection as far as like empathy and identifying the underlying emotion, versus if you are a relational listener, which I think you and I are more relational, right? Like listening to connect, then I would say that there's different strategies going, okay, well, that might not always work well with your boss. Right? Maybe just giving the information is actually like, so when you're listening, it's not always to build rapport, because not everybody wants to build rapport in every conversation. And so recognizing what type of listener you are, there's two others, but they can help you kind of with what techniques. It also depends on like processing speed. So if your gap in your head is, we speak about 400 words, or we can, excuse me, we speak about 120 to 200 words per minute. But our brain can process about 400 to 800 words per minute. So what are we doing with our brain? And like, where is it going? So even like in an interview right now, you're listening to me, and then you're also having to think of, okay, what's the next question I'm going to ask? So you're using your brain to process more information than I'm actually speaking. So recognizing like what are our pitfalls and gaps can be really helpful, because then you can create techniques that are really specific for maybe your gaps as a listener, if that makes sense.
Okay. So everybody has their own default.
Yeah.
But what would you say is the optimal? Like if you are, bam, this person is the best listener I have ever met, what are the qualities and strengths in that listening style?
Well, I think that they demonstrate kind of that holistic head, heart, and body. So with the head, they demonstrate like they're thinking, instead of thinking ahead to plan the response, they're actually staying on track with the person. So they're really thinking about internally, not just externally listening, but like really thinking about like, oh, okay, that's interesting. So when they're drawing connections or encoding the message, they're encoding it based on the receiver, like a curiosity of like, tell me more. Like, I'm curious. So they kind of stay in their mind of curiosity, but with the speaker. And then I would say with their body, getting rid of distractions, right? So if you're someone that's like, where's the time? Or you're just, you're always looking around, trying to figure out what's happening around you, that can communicate that you're not fully listening. So I think really exceptional listeners are like all in. And it's not even necessarily eye contact, but they're just like, you feel like you're the only person in the space and the room with them, because their body is, you know, turned towards you. They don't have their device in front of them. You know, they're really indicating that you're the only person. And then I would say with a heart, when you share something with someone, whether it's business or it's intentional, repeating it back, not parroting back exactly word for word, but just saying like, okay, so what I'm hearing you say is that this work experience is challenging for you. Oftentimes, like, that's what we need from other people is just to say like, oh, like, you see me.
It validates.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Your existence in a sense. And we all long to be seen by others.
Yes.
And understood and known. How, what, do you have any stories of how listening has improved your life? Like,
oh my
with
gosh.
Your kids, in the classroom, relationships?
Yes, like, yes, and yes. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I think of so many ways. I honestly was a terrible listener. And I think that sometimes you become an expert in the things that you are the worst at. And so for me, my mind, I have a high processing speed and I didn't know about the gap, right? I didn't know, oh, someone's talking. And my intention is like, I'm going to help them. My mind can solve every problem. And so I could give unsolicited advice. I could get distracted. I could pseudo listen like, oh, okay, I can do multiple things because my brain's working and I'm here. But that was all a facade, right? Like it wasn't me truly like sitting in a place of understanding. And so I can think of lots of occasions. My dad, he lost, you know, my stepmom and they were married 30 years. And I remember going on a walk and he was like, I just feel small. And even though I was trying to be relational, I'm like, you are not small. My dad, you've met him, mm-hmm. 6'2" and bigger. I'm like, you are not small. Like, you can't feel this way. And I thought I was actually like listening and trying to help him. But what I realized is like, it makes him emotional, but like I saw in his face where it was like, you're not getting it. Like, you're not listening. And I'm like, I turned towards him and I'm like, what do you mean by small? And I dropped into a listening. I was like, I'm not listening to him. I'm uncomfortable with him being uncomfortable. So I'm advising him and trying to cheer him up. But when I asked him, like, what do you mean by small? He dropped into this place and started crying. And I felt like, oh. So I can name a million examples in a variety of areas in my life where I have not shown up as a good listener. And it's a daily thing. Like, I'm constantly learning and growing in that area. But I think it's one of the most powerful tools we can do in any relationship.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. And I could not agree more with you on that. And it is a daily process of going back to self and going, okay, what is my intention in this conversation? And how can I show up best for myself, for the person I'm with, and really give them my all? And we can all learn from that. And so everybody go out there, find somebody who needs a little love, and with all intentionality in the world, drop into your heart and listen. And we will be right back.
We'll be right back with more insight, inspiration, and real conversations. This is Spanish Janice on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Janice Burt, and you're watching Spanish Janice. Let's keep growing together.
Welcome back to Spanish Janice. Do not miss a second of this show or any of your Now Media favorites streaming live and on demand wherever and whenever you want. Grab the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our lineup of bilingual programs, both English and Spanish. And if you prefer podcasts, listen to Spanish Janice anytime on the Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv. Available 24/7 so that stories you care about are always within reach. And we are back with our guest, Liz Coleman. We are going to be talking about something that a lot of people struggle with. So stay with me here. This fear that so many of us have of public speaking. Mm. And Liz, I know you are a communications professor, and so you speak publicly, you teach it, you see students who are terrified,
yes,
of standing up on stage. What do you want us to know, first of all, about this fear of public speaking?
It's real. It's involuntary. and there are techniques to help you manage it.
You hear that? Real, involuntary, so it's not our fault per se, and techniques to help us manage it. So what are some of the techniques someone that really wants to be able to stand up in front of people, a group of people, and speak, but just feel paralyzed?
Again, it's like that inward journey first. So understanding like what's the science, what's happening to your body. So when we think about public speaking, your body is trying to help you. It does not feel helpful. It's that flight, fight, or freeze. So as we mentioned earlier, we're processing a lot of emotions. So when we see public speaking as like almost like a threat, our body sees it as a threat, it's going to go into that fight, flight, freeze mode and release all these stress hormones like adrenaline and cortisol, and it floods our body. That's why we often feel like shaky hands, our heart rate increases. We also have a lot of students are like, I'm going to forget everything that I'm going to say. That's a real fear because we have high levels of cortisol and adrenaline flooding our body. So that critical thinking region, we don't have as much access to it. So I think first starting with the fact that your body is trying to help you. It's there to help you. And all those like beautiful giftings that your body has, instead of like pushing it away, leaning into that with curiosity. Like, okay, what's happening? What am I feeling? What are the emotions around that? And then reframing that. So one of the cool things we have is a technique is cognitive restructuring. So again, like those emotions are involuntary. Can't control them, but we can control the way that we consciously label it. So emotions are different than feelings. Probably a segment for another time, but feelings are really this conscious labeling of what the emotion is. So for instance, if all of a sudden we have neurotransmitters, like we're asked to give a speech in front of people and we're like, and our body is flooded, that feeling that we have in our body is going to be maybe butterflies in the stomach or a tightness in the chest. It always starts with like a bodily sensation. So recognizing where that is, and then instead of labeling that as, oh, I'm fearful or I'm anxious or I'm scared or I can't do it, we tap into it and go, okay, what is that? It could be nervousness, but it could also be excitement. So what we know is that the same feeling in our body can be a positive interpretation or maybe even a negative. So looking at as an opportunity can be helpful. So that's one strategy. I think you talked about this idea of visualization, right? Like this is an opportunity. Also that third person hack. So I'll have my students or myself create like hacks around my fears. Like I'm afraid I'm going to forget everything. Instead say like, Liz, you've prepared, you've practiced, you know the material. Nobody is going to remember what you leave out. You don't have to be perfect. So that can be a great technique. And there's several more as well.
Well, just to put a little pin in that right there, and you know this from high school, but I used to compete in these speech competitions. We were both in speech and debate. You would do more debate. I hated debate. Oh, you were so good at it, though. But I would do these speech competitions, and in one of those competitions, I forgot my lines, mm-hmm. right? And so had that moment of all those stress hormones flooding my entire being and going like, what is even my name? Mm-hmm. I don't even know what my name is right now. So I end up losing that competition. And because of that, for 20 years, basically, I refused to speak publicly because it was such a trauma event for me. So I have very much what you're talking about with the fight, flight, freeze, whatever, where I will involuntarily start shaking, like violently, almost like these convulsions. And I've had to use some of the techniques that you're talking about. And also just the more you get out there and do it.
100%.
But that's the part, right, is how do we convince ourselves to do the hard thing. Convince ourselves that the discomfort is worth it for the gift we are going to get out of it. So What do you say to students when they're really struggling? Because I'm sure you've had some students that are like, I'm going to skip class because I
100%.
Don't. Yeah. What do you do? How do you encourage those people to keep giving it a go and keep trying and not to give up?
Well, I mean, sometimes we look back at old scripts that have been unhelpful, like the example you gave, like, are we operating out of obsolete information? Yes, like a traumatic experience can happen 20 years ago, but are we using that as a current script that may be limiting us? So taking some time, again, that inward journey of like, what is the limiting script? What is the obsolete information so that we can attack that head on can be really helpful. The other thing is I always tell my students, your speeches are gifts. They're just gifts. Small gifts, and like you get to give a gift to someone. And so if we reframe it that way, it's like it's just a little piece of you, and it doesn't have to be perfect. And in fact, it's probably better if it's not perfect. And so thinking about it as like, hey, we get to sit and we get to be in my classrooms, it's like a learning environment, right? They're not on a TEDx stage. It's not going to be televised around the world. But it's just this, I always say, this is a safe learning place. Like, I'm here to help guide you. And I do think a coach, especially in extreme situations, having a communication coach or a speaking coach can be helpful because you can take those baby steps with a safe audience to develop that confidence, maybe rewrite that obsolete information in that script that's not serving you anymore. And then getting kind of your footing to where you can start going, okay, that didn't happen this time. Like, maybe I did have something else. My hands were shaking, but I could say my name. And recognizing, like, that's a really cool, that's cool progress, right? Yeah. And so I definitely always say, these are just small gifts. And I say, your audience is for you. I think that's one thing we forget. Like, I mean, yes, in this day and age, there's, like, a lot of hostile communication too. But most people, like, if they're face-to-face, like, they don't want you to stumble. They don't want you to fail. And so I often think, like, your audience is generally for you. And if there is one person that's not, like, that's so about something, has nothing to do with you anyway.
Right, so, right. Yeah. Not taking those things so personally. I know that for a lot of people, there's this fear of being seen. Mm. Like, having that visibility, standing up, and that is the vulnerability piece of just opening. And I personally feel the most open people and vulnerable people to me are typically the most engaging speakers. Like, I really appreciate their presence. They have a good presence and they connect to the audience. What do you think prevents a lot of people from wanting to be from wanting to be seen, from wanting to show up fully who they are? You know, without wearing the masks of like, I have to be this person. Mm-hmm. So I have to say these words and I have to, how do people work through that?
Well, I think as we begin to see like speakers that do that and how audiences are drawn to them, I think that's helpful because we can see that attraction. Like, oh my gosh, someone had the courage to, you know, like shake. I remember when we did our TEDx, like someone just like, she literally just shook right there. She's like, oh, I got to shake this off. And we're like, that is so beautiful, right? It was just like, it was really refreshing to see this like vulnerability and like, this is what works for me. And it made it feel like it wasn't a script. She was just like fully showing up. And I think that was one of the more memorable presentations because of that. I think the reality is just continuing to show up, even if it's a little bit. You don't have to go all the way, all in. Make it a goal of where you want to go, but be okay with like baby steps. Be okay with the interview or the speech that sets you back a step. That's okay too. Like, it's really about this slow compound effect. And then in 5 years, you might just surprise yourself and be like, oh, like I actually feel comfortable. I feel like myself, you know? But I think it's a small journey that you just have to keep peeling back and getting to know yourself. At least for me, I have to get to know myself better every single time. And figure out what is my own voice and what is my own authenticity and being comfortable in that. So
I really like that. The little baby steps, saying yes to certain things that where we feel that fear and a little bit of that inner resistance so we can continue pushing through. To wrap up this amazing show, which I'm so grateful for you coming here in studio to be with us. what is something you want to leave our listeners with? What's on your heart to share, something that could really improve their lives, whether that be communication, listening, whatever. What do you want to share with the audience?
Oh, I love that question. I have always been drawn to communication. And one of the things that sticks with me and I share in the classroom all the time is that you cannot not communicate. And recognizing that even though we talk all the time, this is a skill that you use every day, all day, whether you're actually using words or not. And so being intentional, like actually learning skills to help communicate better. Don't just assume it's natural. It takes work and it takes practice. So just keep in mind that it's the one skill you use every day, and sharpen it in whatever way you can, whether it's listening, EQ, or your own self-awareness.
Everybody, you can't not communicate. So we might as well learn from the best, sharpen our skills, dig deep into the fears and those limiting beliefs that hold us back so that we can truly show up with all of our gifts and all of our presence, because that is what is going to change the world. Thank you for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next time.